Eeny, meeny, miny, moe, catch a Medicare for the Lazy Man podcast. A Medicare podcast that could survive a nuclear holocaust. He knows that boys rule and girls drool. Medicare expert, Doug Jones.
Hey there, everyone. Welcome to the Medicare for the Lazy Man podcast. As Drew McMillan, our erstwhile announcer, just told you, I'm Doug Jones, your Medicare expert for today and probably for the rest of the week. And we'll see about next week. I don't mind going week to week with this job because, frankly, it keeps me on my toes and is not going to let me get complacent. So thank you for joining us. We're so happy to have you. Drew McMillan is also the host of Powerboat TV, a Canadian half-hour television show about all things boating, powerboats, motorboats, racing boats, and all the accoutrement that boat owners need to know about, and improvements and inventions that make their lives a little easier or a little more fun. So he is busy on the off season when we're not asking him to record intros to this podcast, but we try to keep him as busy as we can. The primary reason for that being he doesn't charge anything. Every day I look in the mail and I say, oops, Drew did not send me a bill. So I'm hoping that continues. That's going to definitely have an effect on the longevity of this podcast. It keeps our overhead down. It means we can afford to do more and more episodes about Medicare and about Randy and Doug goofing around. Hey, Randy, is it goofing around time yet?
I got some good news and I got some bad news.
Uh-oh. Well, which do you want to do first? I would normally say bad news, but.
Well, I don't know what's bad news, but as you mentioned in our session earlier this week, we are trying to be a little better about being a little more structured. So let's go ahead and take care of the business. Let's take care of the business. I know you got some things you want to talk about out of the mailbag and some other things. So let's do that. Let's get that out of the way. And then we can play. Like my mom used to say, you got to do your chores and then you can play.
That's a very grown-up, responsible attitude. And I'm glad because I'm too tempted to go off and goof around. And it's nice to have somebody to rely on, meaning I can blame you if I don't have any fun. I can say, well, it's all Randy's fault. So I've got a few items that I dredged out of the mailbag. I had to shuffle things around because one of our favorite listeners, Dominic Regina, sent us a package which had some model railroad mailbags in it to remind us to go to the mailbag more often. So I rearranged the mailbag and I found the last two items from 2019. Every mailbag item that I read from today forward is going to have a more current date stamp on it. It'll be a 2020 written request. So the two that I have left over from last year, one is a woman named Karen, and she wrote, "Dear Doug, I have a few questions about signing up for Medicare A and B and supplemental plans. And is it also necessary to sign up for Social Security at the same time as you sign up for Medicare? I want to keep working until 70. If you could please call me," and she gives the phone number, "or email me at this address. I'm working today until 11. I'm a nurse, but I'm available tomorrow, the 8th of October. Thank you in advance for your assistance." Well, I had to tell this nice young lady that I was driving around the South. I was driving around Dixie in a 50-plus-year-old Corvette with a bunch of other like-minded old Corvette drivers. And we were on our way down to, we were doing a lot of sightseeing, we were on our way down to Cruising the Coast, big car show that takes place every September, or maybe early October, between Gulfport. Well, we stayed at Gulfport, Mississippi, but it stretches from Louisiana over to Pensacola. And man, that is one heck of a lot of classic cars that collect down there. Probably this year, not so much, but I had this correspondence almost a year ago. So I said, I cannot help you right now by talking to you on your schedule, but let me tell you this. It is not necessary to sign up for Social Security when you enroll in Medicare Parts A and B. You'll be dealing with the Social Security Administration, but that is because Social Security Administration was ordered to administer Medicare as well. So even though you're talking to the Social Security people, you are not going to be forced to sign up to receive Social Security unless you want to. And you can delay that. I understand that the Social Security benefit will increase at the annual rate of 8%, and that will continue if you don't take Social Security up to age 70. And at age 70, the way it is right now, that's not going to grow anymore after age 70. So if you're 70 years old and you haven't signed up for Social Security, you might as well go ahead and do it now, because your future years would not be any larger. Your payments would not be any larger. So anyway, she said, thank you so much. It does help. So have a good trip through the South. So that was one mailbag item that I got last year. And the final one I'm going to read from last year, it was a lengthy exchange. We had back and forth and back and forth and back and forth. And I'm going to cut it down to the nub of the conditioner, as Barney Fife would say. No, he wouldn't say nub. Did he say nub? Anyway, it was a long exchange from a woman who had been active duty lifer in some branch of the military. She didn't tell me which branch. But one of her options for coverages was VA coverage and VA drug coverage. And she was wondering how it fit in with regular Medicare and a Medicare supplement and a drug plan that she would buy if she ignored the VA availability. And frankly, I've got to tell you, it is an area of confusion, not just for me, but for other Medicare experts. And I have heard of people that have found the VA difficult to access. In other words, if they wanted to go to a VA doctor, if they had to go to a VA hospital, if they wanted to get drugs from the VA, they found it inconvenient. And then I've heard from other people who are very, very satisfied with their VA-provided benefits. Access to the doctors is good, and the drugs are easy to get. So I can't speak for everyone that has VA benefits available to them. I can only say that if your VA benefits are easy and convenient for you to access, then you don't need to get a standalone prescription drug plan, and you may not need a Medicare supplement plan if the VA is considered to be creditable coverage. I know the drug coverage is, but if their medical benefits are considered to be creditable, then you wouldn't worry about a late enrollment penalty down the road. So it's a mystery that has yet to be solved, but for the person who has the VA benefits available and wants to consider using them, consider whether you're always going to find it convenient to use them for your drug and your medical treatment. And if so, apparently, from what I'm getting, the VA is considered to be creditable and you won't worry about a late enrollment penalty. But if it's inconvenient for you to get to a VA facility or to use them, or if your classification makes you way down the list of important people to treat, in other words, if you are, there's a classification list, I understand, and you may not be the first person that they see if a bunch of people show up for treatment at the same time. I don't really know all the details about it, but I'm saying that VA benefits are okay if you can get to them conveniently. If not, then you should consider an attractively priced Medicare supplement and an attractively priced drug plan, prescription drug plan, that are not VA related. And that's what we're here for, to help you find those things. So that's two mailbag items. And sometimes we don't even do one, Randy. So I think I'm kind of ahead of the game for today. What do you think?
I think the new schedule is working out better, Doug.
I'm glad to hear it.
We seem to be getting through more content, which is certainly important, around the Medicare subject. We're getting through more content in I think a more structured fashion, and then we're leaving the fun for after we finish our supper.
Well, I'm going to rely on you to keep me on the straight and narrow, because it's too easy for me to wander off into the weeds, and that way leads to disaster and unhappiness.
I do have a question, though.
Well, ask away.
You made a comment earlier that there was a bunch of like-minded individuals, and you said old Corvette drivers. Yeah, and did you mean old drivers driving old Corvettes or old drivers driving Corvette?
Yes. The cars are old, and the people who I met in 2008 have gotten old.
What would you guess the average age of the vets? I'm not going to ask about the people, because that could be all over the place. But what is the typical average Corvette that's in your club?
It's not a club. That's the first thing we say, because clubs collect dues, and we would kick the snot out of anybody that came to us demanding money. So it is more of a gang rather than a club. Secondly, these people all came together because they belong to a website that fosters and celebrates the mid-year Corvette. And by mid-year, that has a specific definition. That is a Corvette from 1963 to 1967. That model was the second model year, or second model of Corvette. The first model is called a C1 now. Back in the old days, before people started using the letter C, it was basically a Corvette, and that was produced from 1953 until 1962. And then they changed everything, suspension, the body style, all the innards, that became the new Corvette. And so from 1963 until 1967, they produced tons of new Corvettes, and they've sold bunches of them. I think like 20,000 a year in some years. So it was a success. So then they decided to spruce it up, and they changed the look, at least, of the Corvette in 1968. And all of a sudden, my Corvette became a mid-year, because it was in the middle of the original Corvette and then 1968 and newer Corvettes. So from 68 until 83, they made that new Corvette, and the mid-years, you know, continued to be popular because people like that design. And so there was a website, there was an article in the Chicago Tribune that said, hey, if you want to have your classic car preserved for posterity so that people will know about it, then go to a website, and in the case of mid-year Corvettes, go to the C2 Corvette registry and register your car. And I thought, well, you know something, I'm the third owner of mine. I don't know anything about the first owner, and the second owner I met when I bought the car, so I barely know anything about him. He had kind of a sad story. He mustered out of the Marine Corps during or shortly after Vietnam, and got a job, and he signed a lease on an apartment, you know, a pretty fancy schmancy apartment. And he bought this Corvette, and all of a sudden everything fell through. The job fell through, and he couldn't afford the apartment anymore. And he and I sat on the floor of the apartment and on a cardboard box, and he signed over the title of the Corvette to me. He was pretty depressed because he had to give up all of his fun stuff. But that was when the car was 6 years old, and so that was 1971, and we've had it ever since. But I thought, okay, future people, without me doing something, they're not going to know anything about the history of this car. And that's one of the things that car collectors like to talk about. So I went to this website, and I entered all the information I could think of and all the information I had about the car. And then a few months later, I got an email from the owners of the website. And I'm thinking this is a big, giant corporate endeavor. It turned out to be a retired couple from Illinois that had moved to Florida. And they just love Corvettes, especially mid-year Corvettes. And they said, we've got an itinerary for a Route 66 trip starting in Chicago in April and taking 2.5 weeks going out to Santa Monica Pier, where the trip will end. If you'd like to go, then let us know. So all of a sudden, one morning in Chicago, we found ourselves at the beginning of the trip, looking at each other over at Lou Mitchell's breakfast restaurant on Jackson Boulevard. We'd shoved a whole bunch of tables together, and we were all looking at each other like, who's the weirdo, and who's going to be really irritating, and boy, these people look like a bunch, and if they make it uncomfortable for me, I'm just going to bail out. You know, I don't need to stick with these losers the whole trip. 2.5 weeks later, we're standing on Santa Monica Pier, tearfully hugging and pledging to travel together every year in the future. And up until this year, we have. So that's the very long answer to your short question. Who got old, the cars or the people?
Well, I wasn't going to put it quite that bluntly, but okay. You got the point.
Yeah.
But I have another question, and this may take a little bit of, you know, guesswork on your part. Probably not, because you're an expert. But, you know, I've talked about a friend of mine back in Nebraska by the name of Frank. Mm-hmm. Okay, so Frank got out of the Army, I think, in 62. He was stationed in Germany, and he tells a story about he got some money, obviously got out of the Army, and I don't know, maybe he had some sort of a savings plan, or maybe he got a, you know, I don't know. But anyway, somehow or another, he came up with a little bit of extra cash, and he talks about going to a little dealership, a little Chevy dealership, and, you know, like clear out in the western end of Nebraska where there's not much of anything other than rattlesnakes and, you know, sagebrush.
Yeah.
And he bought himself a brand new Corvette, and he tells me that he got that cash on the barrel head for $4,200. Does that sound right for about a 62 Corvette?
That sounds right, because what would have happened is that base sticker price would have been in the neighborhood of $3,000, but he found some goodies. And that dealer saw him coming and said, you know, we can put some special stuff on this car for you. So 4,200 sounds about right. And I hope he enjoyed that car for a bunch of years, but back in those days, they weren't prized like they are today.
Well, this is going to, I can see the tears were going to start coming to your eyes now, but he married a wonderful German native and brought her back to the States, and one thing led to another, and pretty soon they had a baby. And the Corvette had to turn into some sort of a Ford sedan.
Oh, boy. Well, I will tell you that that's a common story. It has nothing to do with his military service. It has to do with the fact that that the baby came to live with him. That's a big bust when it comes to collector car hobbies. But I know that my wife twisted my arm several times to sell the car. If we wanted to buy a house, if we needed money for something family related, well, time to sell the Corvette. And I said, no, 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 we're never selling the Corvette. Well, here's the good news. Years later, she admitted that that was the right thing to do, and that her irritation with me was not well founded, and that I was right and she was wrong.
Oh, wow.
So, you know, it doesn't work that way everywhere. Not everybody is as stubborn as I was. And I had a bunch of other classic cars through the years that I bought, drove, and sold. But the Corvette stayed with us. And she now talks about it lovingly as her first baby. We had that Corvette before we even had any of our kids. And I whipped it into shape, and now we can travel long distances in relative comfort with our friends that also have old Corvettes. Problem is, some of those friends have given up driving the old ones and they've gone to newer Corvettes because they are more comfortable physically.
Well, I would stick with you, Doug. If I could have both, certainly I would have a new, you know, fully loaded Vette, but they are awesome looking mobiles, but I still would have to have my old original.
Yeah, I'm a traditionalist. I just can't give it up. And driving around in the old Corvette gets a lot of waves, makes a lot of people happy. When 10 of us pull up to a gas station and basically just take it over, people will pull in off the street just to come in and see what's going on. And it becomes a social event. Dinner becomes a social event.
I can totally understand it.
We were in Traverse City, Michigan, and there was a collection of Hagerty collector car insurance people having a meeting. And when we had, I think, 8 or 10 Corvettes pull up outside the restaurant, all of a sudden the Haggerty people ended their meeting. They paid for all of our alcohol and all of our food, and they just hosted us all night long. They gave us a tour of their facilities the next day. And it was just a wonderful opportunity for them to talk to the clientele that were actually out driving the cars, because it just doesn't happen all that often. You know, a lot of people collect cars, but not a lot of people take them out unless it's a beautiful, perfect, sunny day.
I can understand that, because if I had a cherry Corvette like you've got, I'd probably wrap it in plastic and put it in the garage. But I really understand. It's really cool taking them out and, you know, kind of the wind in your hair and the bugs in your teeth. But I can understand wanting to keep it under wraps.
Well, the people that want to keep them under wraps that I don't track with are the people who spend tons of money buying a perfect car with all the provenance, the history, paperwork, and everything, and then they stash it away and never enjoy it, but it becomes a commodity. It becomes an investment vehicle. And those are the people that I don't track with, because frankly, I love the old cars. I love old Fords. We were talking the other day about Fords. I could have been a Ford guy. I was surrounded by cars of, when I was young, of all types, and I have a lot of respect for the old, beautiful cars that were designed before the federal government got into the business in 1967 of making car design decisions. So I miss the old days, and I like the old cars, and I'm never going to stick mine away and refuse to drive them.
So, is Ralph Nader dead yet?
He ought to be. He ought to be, I'll tell you right now.
he ruined my life, Doug.
His political aspirations are dead, and that's a small victory right there.
Well, you know something? We've got to end this out. We're coming in for a landing. We're out of time. We're just about out of gas. So let's thank everybody. But we got something, the business to take care of is we got to send them to Amazon.com and buy several copies of your book.
Buy as many
Medicare
as you can.
Medicare for the Lazy Man 2020.
Yeah, you can carry a lot of the e-books if you want to. You can buy, you know, 20 of those things and you won't be burdened by them. And I don't know how you're going to pass them out to your friends, but paperback book is by far the most popular, but that is also the Audible book is catching up to it, and the ebook is the second out of the three. So, or you can go, if you want a paperback, but you don't want to pay quite the Amazon price, you can go to barnesandnoble.com, and they will happily provide you one for a few dollars less than Amazon will. And then we have the podcast. You might drop a review on whatever podcast recorder you're listening to this on, help keep us in business. But other than that, right now, I guess that's pretty much the important stuff we had to talk about. Right, Randy?
I think so. Well, thank you, everyone, and thank you, Doug, for joining us today. We certainly appreciate your time. And audience, we certainly appreciate your time, too. You could have been a lot of different places, but you weren't. You were here with us, metaphorically speaking, around the table with Doug Jones, the Medicare expert from Oklahoma. But in the end result, you spent about 32 and a half minutes with Doug, the anti-insurance guy, with Medicare for the Lazy Man.com.
Thanks for joining us.